Hey, it's Lisa Carlin from Attacking Third to tell you about the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. It's equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend. The Hyundai Santa Fe features available all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, plus available dual wireless charging pads, ensuring that you can take on any adventure. It's ski season, and with the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, I can easily load the car with all my gear plus my friends in the third row and make it right to the base of the slopes with all-wheel drive. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Attacking Third, a CBS Sports Soccer podcast. I'm Sandra Herrera, lead NWSL writer for CBS Sports, joined today, as always, by my colleague and co-host Lisa Roman, broadcaster and analyst for CBS Sports. On today's segment, the NWSL is back. We've got a weekend preview for you all here, and the CONCACAF W Championship will start, and we're going to preview the United States Women's National Team's first match against Haiti. We're going to be taking a little bit of a shift as CONCACAF W begins. We're going to be leaning heavily on that content, so make sure you tune in and you stay tuned to all of the stuff that we're going to be bringing to you around the CONCACAF W Championship. NWSL will still be on our radar, but we're going to be coming heavy with all of the great stuff surrounding that World Cup qualifying tournament. Another special announcement before we get into the show. This Friday, July 1st, Attacking Third, Lisa and I will be outside of the Bank of California Stadium from 4 to 7 p.m. local time for a CONCACAF W event ahead of Angel City versus Portland Thorns. We're going to be hosting a live show with special guests. We're going to be giving away Attacking Third gear and hosting some trivia. So come through, hang out with us Friday, July 1st, 4 to 7 Pacific time at Bank of California Stadium. It's all happening, Lisa. I'm very excited. What an exciting show for us today.
I know. I'm so excited, and we get to be in LA for the game on Friday. And we've got Attacking Third merch that we're giving away, which I'm very, very excited about. But the NWSL is back. The CONCACAF W Championship is starting on Monday. It's like everything is happening at once, and we're going to cover it all. And I'm very excited about that. But the next couple of weeks are going to be hectic, filled with so much football. And I'm so excited for it. So excited.
I'm really, really hyped for all this. I know there was a brief break there in the international window for the league, but now the games are returning, and they're returning as CONCACAF W is going to be kicking off. So it's going to, like, we're going to have like our heads on a swivel, quite frankly. We're going to be locked in and tuned in to everything as much as we can. Of course, we're going to do the first half of this episode filling our audiences in on NWSL action has returned. Within that, of course, there's also the trade window that's opened. It's been open since early in June, but some exciting things to talk about here. I know that there has been a number of teams signing national team replacement players across the league, with over 40 NWSL players out on international duty for the next few weeks for various competitions, not just CONCACAF W Championship, but it could be the African Cup. It could be the Euros that are taking place. All the different types of international events that are taking place means that there's going to be a big chunk of players who are missing across NWSL roster. So we're starting to see a lot of different announcements from players and signing national team replacement players. But the biggest headline that we were so excited to come on here and very hyped to talk about ahead of the us making our picks on the previews is Sydney LaRue is making headlines because Orlando Pride and Angel City have agreed to terms on a trade that is going to send Angel City the rights to Sydney LaRue. And in exchange, Orlando Pride is going to receive, well, quite frankly, a ton of allocation money. They announced, both teams announced the trade early on Wednesday, and it's going to be about a total of $95,000 in allocation money. It's $75,000 in allocation money plus the potential for $20,000 more across 2022 and 2023 if LaRue meets certain performance-based criteria. But big pickup for this team, quite frankly, in the absence of Kristen Press sustaining a season-ending NWSL injury. And we've got Tobin Heath officially training with Oil Reign. So we're talking like two heavy hitters here starting to get integrated with their teams now, Lisa.
Huge, huge. These are two instrumental players in the league, in their game, in offenses, right? Like scoring goals, creating opportunities. And for Tobin Heath, returning to the NWSL, this is huge. She's been out of the game for a little bit after she ended her contract with Arsenal and now coming to the States. Everyone knew that she was going to pop up somewhere. And the fact that she has popped up at OL Reign and under Laura Harvey is phenomenal. And it comes at a time during this international break where the Euros are happening, CONCACAF W Champions, African Cup of Nations is all happening. So there are so many absent players in the NWSL because they are with their respective national teams. So it creates a great opportunity for a player like Tobin Heath, right? When you look at OL Reign, just for the U.S. side, they've got Rose Lavelle, Megan Rapinoe, Sofia Huerta, just so many different players that are absent from that squad. And then having Sydney LaRue traveling to Angel City, being traded. This is huge, right? Like, this is such a big trade for Angel City. I cannot emphasize that enough. When Orlando traveled to Angel City to play against LA, Sydney LaRue was the only one that scored a goal in that 1-0 win for Orlando.
3 minutes in.
And that was Orlando's only, like, right? Like, they haven't won that many games. They have two wins in this regular season, and Sydney LaRue is the reason for one of them. So this is a huge trade. Sydney LaRue went to UCLA. She spent her collegiate days at UCLA in Los Angeles. So for her to return to that area is fantastic. And this comes after Amy Turner and Orlando Pride split ways. But Sandra, I want to ask you about this because after Amanda Cromwell, former head coach with Orlando Pride, was put on suspension along with first assistant Sam Green, there was a freeze put on Orlando and their trades, players coming in and out. And now with the Sydney LaRue trade, has that freeze been lifted, I guess? Like, what more can you tell us on that?
Yeah, so, you know, shout out to all the great reporting that's happening around this. You know, it just feels like we did an episode about this just yesterday, quite frankly, with the news of Cromwell and Green being placed on administrative leave. But within that, very credible reporting out of The Athletic via Meg Linehan, you know, confirming that there's a roster freeze on any movement out of Orlando due to the ongoing investigation. And quite frankly, with that recent news coming about Amy Turner, that Orlando Pride went ahead and just sort of bought out her contract. She's making her departure back overseas. With that, the equalizer also confirmed that the freeze essentially was lifted. So not public, I guess, you know, direct public facing information from the league itself, but credible reporting confirming both of the start and the ending of that freeze. And I think we saw that happen with Amy Turner. Maybe it sort of sent off a little bit of an alarm, not in a bad way, but saying like, hey, okay, well, if this is happening with Orlando Pride and this player, is there going to be more movement to be expected out of Orlando? And quite frankly, this is probably the biggest move that I think folks could have anticipated even coming out of this trade window. I mean, we're talking about, yes, how much this is a big win for Angel City. We're talking about getting an experienced, capable, good striker in the league coming to Los Angeles and a bit of a homecoming. You know, LaRue played her in LA collegiately with UCLA, was a leading scorer over her time during three seasons with UCLA, and getting to Angel City. And she's going to immediately impact things on the pitch and go ahead and slot in, I think, fairly seamlessly for,
yeah, I agree.
Yes, fairly seamlessly for Freya Coombe and their system. But I do wonder on the Orlando Pride side of things, what's going to be the answer there for this team offensively? You know, we talked about this team and how they sort of had this narrative around them is that they were going to be going through a rebuild, what that's going to look like. And it's not not exactly near the halfway point of the season for NWSL of the 22 game season. There's some teams with 8 to 10 games that have been played so far this year, but even just with that, it's just sort of feels like, are you hitting the reset button at this point? And how are you hitting a reset button in the middle of something that's supposed to be a rebuild year? So I would say, yeah, huge win for Angel City. Some concerns, I think, for Orlando. And if you're someone who's a fan of that franchise and you're just sort of questioning some of the moves that are taking place in terms of the personnel there. So I'm selfishly, I'm thrilled that this move happened before we're actually on our way to LA. You know, this is something that I think, you know, the club is very, very excited about and their supporters are going to be very excited about. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I just think it's going to fit an immediate need for them. This is a La Russa striker who embodies like that sort of just natural, and it's an unnatural skill to have, but this sort of natural like ball poaching ability. She's just like this striker who can just put in the shift on both sides of the ball, whether you need them to help generate, produce, or create an attack, or you need them to cover some more ground defensively. Like, she does it all. And I think we saw that a lot. I think with Kristen Press and Angel City, she was being tasked with a lot of responsibility to cover a lot of ground for Angel City early in these weeks here with them. And I just think getting a player like LaRue is going to help them continue to flesh out and build what they were doing. So I think great pickup for Angel City. And for Orlando, you're maybe scratching your head a little bit about this. I mean, because LaRue is a player that signed a multi-year deal with them fairly recently. So I think more question marks if you're on the Orlando side of things, but a lot of questions answered if you're on the Angel City side of things. You know what, Lisa, if you don't mind, can I react a little bit to Tobin Heath going to OL Reign? Because this happened when I was gone. This happened when I was gone.
Tell me, what's up with Tobin Heath going to OL Reign? What are your thoughts on it, Sandra?
First of all, it's awesome, number one. I hate to just I'm not trying to minimize it like that by any means. But, you know, I left for a little bit. I took a little vacation. I had
good for you. Well deserved.
A brief absence from attacking third for a little bit. But naturally, when that happens, all these other things happen. And one of the main things that happens was that Tobin Heath got traded to OL Reign via her rights with Racing Louisville. And now that she's like a fit, like now that like I've seen it, like seen Tobin Heath in OL Reign gear training with the team, it actually kind of feels real now. At first I was like, that's insane. Like how did that happen? How did that come to fruition? Because of all of like just her longevity in the league itself and just sort of her journey within the league and where she's coming from. I mean, this is a player who has familiarity with the Reign franchise, but as a rival, like having played so long with Portland Thorns. So I'm very excited for this move. And I want to thank you for allowing me the the chance to finally get to react to this.
It feels like a little bit of a delayed reaction, but Sandra, that's what this show is for. You're allowed to react to it. You were on vacation, which is so well deserved, and now we are getting images of Heath at training with OL Reign. We've heard her speak about going with Laura Harvey. Yeah, it's real. It's happening.
There's something about Laura Harvey getting these types of players, these very experienced club of players, and then getting them together and playing in her system where they just sort of produce these results and just sort of look like they have not missed a beat. And I am so excited to see Tobin Heath's return to NWSL, because, you know, in her absence, we've seen her play overseas and in Europe, but we haven't been able to maybe see that on a consistent basis because she's had to deal with some, you know, navigate her way through some injuries. So I think being back in the States, being back with a coach that she's familiar with, I think is going to do wonders for her game. And I cannot wait to see this second half of OL Reign. I'm very, very excited for what the potential here that we could see. And it starts very soon. It's going to start very, very soon. We've got 6 matches that are coming up this weekend, all 12 clubs in action for NWSL this week. Going to be missing some heavy hitters, but there's still going to be some bright and big names in the spotlight. We're talking about LaRue. We're talking about Heath. All these games you can watch across Paramount Plus. Orlando Pride and Racing Louisville will be on CBS Sports Network. But Friday has a triple header of games. Let's start in order, Lisa. We've got Houston Dash versus Kansas City Current Friday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. I want to choose draws for all of these, Lisa. I'm not even going to lie to you. I want to choose a draw for every single one, but we got to make some picks.
Every single one is a draw? No, no.
Who are you picking in this one? Who are you picking? They're coming off of a break. They're coming off of a break. Exactly. There's something joining this that's going to happen naturally. Teams are going to be missing key players.
We're putting rules on these picks and predictions. You get one draw over the weekend, maybe two. You can't just go draws across the board. All right. You got to make it exciting for the people. Houston Dash, Kansas City, they're kicking off the NWSL return. Houston, before the break, they're coming off a giant win over North Carolina, 4-3. That was a huge win. It was in Cary, North Carolina as well. And Kansas City's coming off a 2-2 draw with Chicago. So a lot of goals that Houston and Kansas City scored before the break. Yep. However, looking at players that'll be missing, right? Like, that's a huge factor now as we come into this July. I'm going to go with Kansas City in this one because with what the Current has and the rookies and what they've been able to do, Elise Bennett and Luera and Weinbrenner, they're just really clicking and they're on a great page. CeCe Kaiser and Kristen Hamilton were developing a lot of chemistry in the front line for Kansas City before this international break. And I imagine they're going to pick that right back up if it hasn't been getting stronger throughout this break. I go with Kansas City in this one. What about you? Houston or the Current?
I like that you say Houston or the Current. You're not even giving me
You get one draw, but like,
well, I'm not going to use it for this one, but I am excited about this game. I mean, we're talking about some of the trades that happened, but one of the ones that we didn't get a chance to highlight was the Ebony Salmon trade to Houston Dash. That's another move that I really, really love for this Houston Dash. I think it's coming at a very important time as they're missing, quite frankly, every single one of their dynamic attackers to either the Euros or CONCACAF W Championship. We're talking no Sanchez, no Daly, no Prince. Who's going to slot in here? And I think they found a good answer. And Ebony Salmon, I'm excited to see this player get more extended minutes in the NWSL. We saw those diminish, quite frankly, in her time with Racing Louisville. But that's a lot of pressure to put on a first game on one specific player. I just am not too sure if there's going to be enough there.
But she's also really fired up.
My gosh, she's extra motivated. And I love that for her. And I'm excited to see the revenge tour for sure. I just am looking at this Kansas City Current side and how they're assembled at the moment and who they have available at their disposal. And I'm also looking at another forward for them to sort of have another big impact during this sort of stretch of international tournaments. And that's Elise Bennett. We have seen what she's been able to do for this Kansas City Current side. And I think once you sort of give her even more freedom to go out there and just sort of play her game, really, really good things happen. And I'm hopeful that we'll get to see that in this game for Kansas City. So I'm going to be going with Kansas City as well. Let's go with the next one here, Lisa. We've got Oil Rain versus North Carolina Courage. This one's kicking off Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern. We've got some NWSL action after dark. The Rain versus the Courage. We've got the Courage, who have been struggling to find their footing a little bit here during the regular season, a team that's also going to be missing some pretty heavy hitters in their rotation, including their rookie, Diana Ordonez. And we've got OL Rain that has made some acquisitions, and I think the right time. So I'm going to take it the first pick on this one. I'm going OL Rain in this one, Lisa. Who do you got in this one?
I like that pick, right? Like, this is so hard for me because you have to balance the players that teams have lost, the players that they have gained. And both of these sides, OL Rain and North Carolina, they've lost big, big heavy hitters for each of their squads. OL Rain, they're coming off, before the international break, a 1-0 win over Angel City. And then North Carolina, as we just mentioned, coming off that 4-3 loss to Houston that they played at home. But still, the ability to score three goals in that match is very impressive. And the thing with OL Rain is they've been plagued with not finding the back of the net enough, right? They get their shots off, they create their chances, but goalkeepers that they go up against and chances that they take just aren't there to find the back of the net. And when we look at North Carolina, yes, Casey Murphy, goalkeeper, is gone with the U.S. national team. However, they've got a backup that played throughout the entirety of the Challenge Cup and won the Challenge Cup, right? Like, so yeah, with this one, I'm going North Carolina Courage in this win over O.L. Reign.
I love that. I love that. I can't wait to see who was correct or see if we were both wrong, right? Because who knows? I said everyone's going to get a draw, but we'll see. That's what I prefaced it with, but I'm still making picks. Angel City versus Portland Thorns FC. This one's kicking off Friday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. We've already let the good people know. We're going to be at this game. We're going to be doing a pregame live show. We're going to be active at this event and make sure that we keep an eye on the game in front of us as well. Lisa, when we're looking at Angel City versus Portland Thorns, do you have a winner and why?
I'm going to be really honest here. I think Angel City's going to win because we're going to be there and I just want a home win. I'm going to be honest in this one. Now, when I look at this a little bit more objectively,
I love that.
Angel City, right? They're coming off of that 1-0 loss to OL Reign. And Portland's coming off of a very, very dominant 6-0 win over at Orlando. That was the game that Becky Sauerbrunn got her first goal as a Thorn. It was 2-0 at halftime, and then the Thorns just took off. But we've got to look at players missing. Yep. And with Angel City getting Sydney LaRue, I'm hoping that she gets some minutes on Friday night as well. I'm sticking with Angel City in this one. They're at home. I mean, we'll be there. So, like, yeah. Listen,
I'm not picking against LA when I'm going to LA specifically for this game. I'm going with Angel City in this one. I hope we get a riveting, competitive, exciting match. I'm with you, though. I'm looking at the absences for these teams, whether it's, you know, an Angel City that is going to be without Kristen Press for the remainder of the season, or a Portland Thornside that is going to be missing Christine Sinclair, Sophia Smith. These are players who have been largely responsible for their offensive production in front of goal. So we'll see what happens. And I love the environment that we've been seeing out of these Bank of California events for Angel City. I think the support there have sort of been adding that extra layer to the matches, something that we had typically only seen years ago coming out of a facility like Providence Park for Portland Thorns. That's shifted, obviously. And I love that we've got another facility with another support group that can sort of change the momentum of a game. I think when there are those lulls, right? There are often lulls in a game sometimes. And when we've got games like this that are going to be missing a lot of different types of key players, sometimes you're going to need to rely on those momentum swings. So I'm definitely going with Angel City in this one. We've got one game on Saturday, Lisa, and it's New Jersey, New York, Gotham FC versus Chicago Red Stars. This one's kicking off on Saturday, 7 p.m. Eastern, catching on Paramount Plus. Lisa, you had a winner in this one?
Honestly, yes, I have Chicago taking the win in this one. I do. Because with Gotham, right, they're missing Christy Mewis, they're missing Purse, they're missing Ifeoma Anamano, isn't she away as well?
Yep.
Yeah, just missing a lot of people and a lot of depth for Gotham. And they're coming off of a stifling 3-0 loss to San Diego before the international break. Chicago just, they're without Mallory Pugh, but I think in this match, they can be a little bit stronger against this weakened Gotham team. Now, this game is being played at Red Bull Arena in New Jersey, so Gotham has the upper hand in that sense, being a home match. But this is a game that I could have seen a draw, so I'm not surprised that you asked me if it was going to be a draw. However, no, I see Chicago taking the win in this one.
Listen, I love it. It's music to my ears. Draws. I don't either. And it's music to my ears whenever you go with the home side here for me. I love it, but I'm absolutely saving my draw for this game. I just think when we're looking at just even the attacking pieces for both of these teams, Oh man, prepare yourself. This one might be a slug fest in the middle of the park specifically. That's where I'm going to be looking for the action to be taking place between these two teams. Who's going to take control of that midfield and try to work that to their advantage? No Pew for Chicago Red Stars. No Bianca St. George's for the Chicago Red Stars as well. Someone who has sort of shown that they are, you know, really integral to Chicago's, you know, building the attack. And yeah, like you said, no Anumanu, no Purse, no Christy Mewes. Is this going to be the Paige Monahan show? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens, you know, for Gotham and in Chicago. I just don't know if there's enough, quite frankly, for either side. Will this be a 0-0 draw? You know, I don't know. Ooh. I hope not, but I do
Are
think
you
it's
putting
gonna
a
be-
score line on it.
I hope not, but I hope I'm correct in that it's going to be a draw, because I was saving my draw specifically for this one. So we'll see. Hopefully you're correct, Lisa. I would love to come on here and be like, yes, way to go. Good job for picking the Red Stars. San Diego Wave versus Washington Spirit, doubleheader for Saturday. This one's kicking off at 5 p.m. Eastern on Paramount Plus.
You go first in this
another
one.
Another game. We got to talk about who's missing. No Alex Morgan. No. For San Diego Wave, we're talking about a million players missing for the Washington Spirit. I'm exaggerating, of course. But listen, the
like
handful
eight
of players,
seven to the U.S., and then I think one to Mexico. I'm going to go eight or nine players.
Yeah, it's about eight players. I believe Rotter is also away in Euros. There's a chunk of – I mean, you're talking about nearly an entire starting 11 who was absent for the Washington Spirit. And then you're going to be missing players for San Diego. No Jacobson, no Morgan. These aren't any slouches for San Diego, right? These are players who are producing offensively in the attack for this team. Maybe I should have saved my draw for this one, quite frankly, but I didn't. So I'm going to be going for San Diego in this one. I want to see the Casey Stoney game where the depth of the team comes out and gets the result. And I think this could be the game.
I love that you picked San Diego. That would be my second choice if I were to pick two different choices in this game as to what would happen. But my first choice is going to be a draw between San Diego and Washington. It's just too close between these two sides. It's the first time we're seeing them play against each other and not full strength. So I'm a little bit saddened by that, because I would love to see full strength San Diego against full strength, healthy, fit Washington Spirit and really see these teams go at it. I still think it'll be a really good matchup, and that's why I'm giving it a draw. I'm thinking we'll get some goals. I'm hoping for like a 1-1 draw, but I still, without all of the force that both of these sides have, and Washington is missing so many players. I know they've signed a number of like national team replacement players, as a lot of these clubs have, but finding that cohesiveness and being able to create that rhythm and that consistency in such a quick turnaround, I don't see it. This game is also being played in San Diego as well. So I would give the upper hand to San Diego in that sense, but I'm going to go with the draw between Casey Stoney and Chris Ward's sides.
Listen, I respect it. I love a draw, and I love when a draw prediction becomes correct. But we'll see between those two games that we just chose draws on and how they shake out. Orlando Pride versus Racing Louisville. Last one for Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time kickoff. This one on CBS Sports Network. Just going to put it where I see it. And I see Racing Louisville taking this game. A lot of movement for Louisville as well. I think when you're looking at these two teams, you can make that same argument for both of them. But they've still got Jess McDonald, and they've still got Hormelay, and they've got Anadi Nadim building on minutes. So I'm looking at Louisville to take this win. How about you?
And a Savannah DeMello.
Yeah.
Cannot forget about a Savannah DeMello in the midfield. I agree with Racing Louisville going to take the win over Orlando. The trade with Orlando losing Sydney LaRue is such an advantage to Angel City and such a detriment to Orlando that this club is going through so much off the pitch, on the pitch, with the movement that's happening. Yeah, I give Racing Louisville this upper hand for all of the reasons you said. Jess McDonald, Nadia Nadine getting more minutes, DeMello becoming so much more comfortable. Jalen Howell should be back with the club after her stint with the U.S. for these pair of friendlies this past week. So And I think being so many coaches have talked about when players go away to the national team and then come back to their clubs, they've got this rub, this national team rub. And I want to see that from Jalen Howell in this match against Orlando. Yeah. Can he just completely dominate the midfield? It'll be interesting to see Michaela Clough for Orlando going against Jalen Howell for Racing Louisville, that rookie battle in the attacking midfield, defensive midfield roles. And I want to see that battle, but I really want to see it from Jalen Howell.
I want to see another set piece from Racing Louisville. Yeah. So Savannah DeMello, like little set piece assassin there. Just, I love it. Real, I think, bit of a dark horse, I think, for, you know, rookie of the year. And we'll see if she has another banger in this game. We have to talk about the United States women's national team. We made our picks and now we got to shift, and we're going to do that right after a quick break.
Finding the right cleat can be transformative. Believe me, I've worn plenty during my career. So getting the right balance is crucial. The cleat needs to feel good on your foot, but also feel good connecting with the ball. The New Balance Furon 7 Plus is built with both of those points in mind, offering overall comfort and precise striking in the game's fastest moments. Because, as I learned the hard way, because I didn't possess much of it, speed matters in soccer. That's why the Furon 7 Plus is built for accuracy and precision at rapid pace, and is engineered specifically for use on firm ground. Why is this the ideal cleat, I hear you ask? Well, not to get too scientific, but the Furon 7 Plus offers a lightweight yet supportive hypo-knit with mesh lining upper construction and is paired with offset lacing for a truer strike of the ball, which is a long way of me saying that your game will immediately get better when these are on your feet. Learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
The CONCACAF W Championship is here. You can catch our full preview that we put out recently with Lori Lindsay. We also had Daniel Slayton on as a guest to talk about the final prep matches against Colombia. You can go and check those episodes out, listen to it as a podcast. You can watch it on YouTube. You can check out my content on CBSSports.com. If you want a reintroduction to the 23 players on the United States women's national team who are going to be competing for a spot in the World Cup, go check it out there. We've got all kinds of stuff on how the CONCACAF W Championship works. It's not just qualifying for the World Cup. There's some other things at stake, and you can check out some NWSL players that I want you to keep an eye on in the CONCACAF W Championship, players who are not affiliated with the United States Women's National Team. So head on over to CBSSports.com and check out all of the content that we've got rolling out for you. We're going to be taking a deeper dive here for you all as the first match, the opening group stage match for the United States Women's National Team, is going to be kicking off on July 4th. That's Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. And guess what? You can catch all of the entirety of the CONCACAF W Championship on Paramount Plus. You can watch the highlights on Attacking Third YouTube. You can watch match replays on Paramount Plus if you want. I am so excited to finally be able to sit down and talk about a preview for the first match of CONCACAF W Championship. Lisa, we're here. We made it to qualifiers.
We made it. World Cup qualifiers. It's here. It feels like we were just covering the Olympics, which we were, to be honest, less than a year ago. But I am very excited about this. It's happening. It's here. We've done so much build up to this. The U.S. have completed their friendlies against Colombia, where we got to see a taste of the 23 that are going to Monterrey, Mexico, or frankly, are already in Monterrey, Mexico. And here, head coach Vlatko Andonovski speak not only about the competition and what is to come in CONCACAF and what he's looking for from his team, but speak specifically about individual players and what he's expecting from them, who we can, as fans and media, expect to see on the pitch, getting consistent minutes, what he's liked and what he hasn't liked, what he wants to see improve upon. And the two friendlies against Colombia, they were pretty telling about what this team is and where they are right now. And when I say they were pretty telling about it, it means that I have some questions, because they weren't strong in what they in certain methods of playing or certain methods of breaking down a low block. And that's what I am very intrigued to watch unfold throughout the CONCACAF W Championship. But it all starts on Monday, July 4th, a heck of a way to close out your Independence Day with this game, 7 o'clock Eastern. It's happening, and you can watch all of these on Paramount Plus and CBS. We're going to be doing live coverage for you here at Attacking Third. We'll be going live right after this match ends, along with Lori Lindsay, to recap it and talk about it. So join us on youtube.com/Attacking Third. We'll be here to talk about it. But yeah, it's here. U.S. versus Haiti Monday.
I also can't believe it's already July. Quite frankly, I'm also just like, my goodness, we just flew through June. Like, there's that other part of it too. I'm like, oh my goodness, like, we flew through June. And quite frankly, with this tournament, we're gonna fly through July. Before we know it, we're gonna blink and it's gonna be over before we're already talking about it, even just its arrival and being here. But I'm into that. I'm very excited for us to be doing our live U.S. Women's National Team post-game coverage on Attacking Third. You know, and listen, if you celebrate July 4th, you know, come check us out after the fireworks. Like, see what's going on. See what we got to say about this game. But it's going to be United States going up against Haiti. We've got Haiti entering this match off of their qualifier, their road to this moment. We saw them play during February and during April of the CONCACAF W qualification process, and they absolutely dominated their group, Lisa.
They completely did. Haiti plowed through the qualifiers heading into the final game against Cuba that Haiti played. They already had 38 goals, and they end up with a 44-goal differential throughout the qualifiers, 0 goals against. Incredibly impressive to see from Haiti. And of these 44 goals, 13 players scored these goals. But another thing to look at across this Haiti national team is the players that they have and their ages and what they've already been able to do, because I think that's something that's super important. We talked so much about from the U.S. side, and the perspective is this is going to be a very different experience for them going to Monterrey, Mexico. The conditions, the training facilities, the competition, the fans, that's happening. And that's why it was so crucial for Vlach Wenonofsky to bring veterans like Megan Rapinoe and Alex Morgan and Kelly O'Hara to provide that veteran leadership and ability off the pitch as much as on the pitch, like a player like O'Hara and Sauerbrunn. So when you look at this Haiti team, the average player age, the average age of all the players is 21.25. And that's
It's a young squad.
It's a very young squad. And that is including Rose-Lord Borghea, who is 29 years old and the oldest player on the roster by 4 years. The next one is Bachaba Luis, who also are the top two goal scorers throughout the Haiti qualifiers, the CONCACAF qualifiers for Haiti. So the average age is 21. Incredibly impressive. There are so many 18-year-olds. There are 10 players on this squad that are age 20 or younger. So this is a young squad that can run, that can compete, that can go in transition, that can sit back and defend. We saw that throughout the qualifiers, having 0 goals against, but then also spring forward and attack. Now how well they do that against the United States and getting split between the lines, that's the only thing that I am looking at for Haiti, because when they do stretch and they go in attack, they're mostly attacking with just three front runners, maybe one midfielder coming in behind. So it's just four players in the front, and there's a big gap in the midfield. And if the United States can occupy that gap as Haiti gets stretched out, when they look to go in the attack and their young athletic players are running all around because they have so much energy and they're in a World Cup qualifier, that this is a big game for them, right? As it is a big game for the U.S. But so those are the holes that I want the U.S. to find in between the lines where Haiti stretched out and pop into those holes. And that's how the United States is going to be able to pick apart a team like Haiti. But Haiti's my dark horse throughout this
conversation. I know you picked them in the previous episode when we did the preview. I love hearing you chat a little bit about it. I'm really excited for audiences to maybe get reintroduced. You know, we had across Paramount Plus the qualification process for this moment. So there's some familiarity with Haiti already for folks who have maybe watched those games that took place in February and in April. But besides this team sort of not only just being a young group, they're a young group that's been together for quite some time. They have played together. There is familiarity there. We can see it in their results. We saw it in their results during the qualification process to this moment, putting up some really, really heavy score lines within their group. But I'm also just equally impressed with their ability and their intelligence to just sort of shift through different stylistic things and formations. They are not a team that is afraid, I think, to change things up or make that adjustment when they need to. If they have to go from plan A to their plan B, they'll do it. And oftentimes they might even find the breakthrough and steal the momentum. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love that this team had a couple of prep games of their own ahead of this mm-hmm. tournament. And I love that they had them against Costa Rica. This is another CONCACAF team that they're going to, you know, potentially see down the road, depending on how the group stage shakes out. So the fact that they had these preparation games against Costa Rica, and we're talking about a 2-1 scoreline, a 4-2 scoreline, Haiti is a team with a lot of good ability. And I love that they're your dark horse, because looking at this group A, I think a lot of folks are looking at it and saying like, oh, this is a tough road. This is some group of death energy right here. And if you're saying that, it's because of the strength of Haiti. So I'm very excited to see what this team can do against the United States. Let's maybe talk a little bit about what we're going to be looking for on the United States women's national team side of things. You know, we just got a couple of games, final prep games against Colombia for this team before they head into this qualifier. And I think you said it best already, Lisa. You know, there was another common thread that we saw within these couple of games around this national team that mm-hmm. has kind of been following them for a little while. And as I was covering the game and having to do a recap or analysis on this game, that's something that I still was left with as we closed out that second game against Colombia. And it took forever because there was a lightning delay. There was a lightning delay. So there was like a 90-minute game went to like a 130 minutes. And so it's just, it was a lot, quite frankly. But in this second match in particular, I think we were hopeful to see some improvement in terms of that scoreline. I think when we were making our predictions with Danielle, I think at one point said, hey, I'm going to say 4 goals. Lindsay said 4 goals. I was like, I'll just say 5. Like, well, so, no, that did not happen. The breakthrough goal for this team happened because Sofia Huerta forced the issue, quite frankly. Service was headed away by Manuela Venegas. It was an own goal in this game. And I thought I liked that. I liked that this moment came early in the game for this U.S. women's national team. It came just, you know, after the 20th minute. And I said, okay, great.
Like, which is much earlier than it had in the first match against Colombia, 55th minute or so at halftime. Correct. It was 0-0 between these two.
So I was like, these are the things we wanted to see, right? These little things improving. And you think like once you get that first one, it's going to open things up, but it just didn't happen that way. So they go into halftime, leading 1-0. If you're Colombia, that's promising for you. And then we saw in the second half, there were a couple moments where Colombia snatched a little bit of that momentum away. So yeah, if you're looking at the numbers, no, like seeing the numbers compared to the offensive stats, with the United States compared to Colombia, we're talking a 2-0 scoreline, excuse me, and you're talking, you know, 18 shots to 6 shots, you know, 2 on target, you know, compared to 5 for the United States. But we definitely saw those moments where they tried to test the back line and Alyssa Nair a little bit. And I think that that was something that they were embracing. This team was going to embrace that. We heard Vlatko Andonovski say, hey, we want to go ahead and see what this team is going to present us. We might see these challenges during the CONCACAF W Championship. We're satisfied with the team's ability to go out there and pick up the win against what was presented to them. But even though you're satisfied with that, you have to say maybe that is still a little bit of a concern, especially as you're looking at this first game going up against a team like Haiti that looks like they're going to be bringing it to their competition instead of trying to sit down in these low blocks that the United States is anticipating facing. So that's my biggest thing right now with this team. If we just remove what happened in 2021, because this is actually a narrative that's been following this team since that Tokyo game, since that bronze medal finish in the Olympics, there was this sort of narrative like, okay, so it's taking them a little bit long to sort of unlock some things from the opposition. But let's just remove that. Even if we're just looking at this 6-7 game stretch for the United States, they're heading into the qualifiers undefeated. And that's, you got to feel good about that.
They're
winners in 6 games, you know, and each of those 6 games have been by some type of multi-goal scoreline. But this little thing is still sort of chasing them. Is it going to take them an hour to unlock what's in front of them?
Exactly. I think that's a really important question that we have to ask. And you mentioned the opening goal most recently in the friendly was an own goal for Colombia. That was the 5th own goal that the United States have forced in 2022, which is the most in U.S. women's national team history. So they've got something going for them there. But I want the United States to be able to come in with a game plan and be able to execute that. It's also important to note that between these 2 Colombian matches, between the first starting lineup and the second starting lineup, we saw 9 changes for Vlatko Andonovski's side. And those 9 changes saw a player like Carson Pickett get a start. Huge for her. It is tremendous. I could talk about Carson Pickett forever. However, she's not going to Monterrey, Mexico. There was also players that got starts and got minutes that Vlatko Andonovski alluded to, that he has 9 of his 11 starters set. And the last 2 that he were evaluating were the goalkeeper position, most likely between Casey Murphy and Alyssa Nair. Casey Murphy getting the start in the first match and Alyssa Nair getting the start in the 90 minutes in the second match. And then the number 9 striker, whether it was between Ashley Hatch or Alex Morgan. Hatch got the start in the first game. Alex Morgan got the start in the second game. And he said that those were mainly the 2 roles that he was evaluating. So when you look at the starting 11 from the first match to the second match, personnel-wise, sure, you can look at that. But when you look at the rhythm of how these 2 different teams played, the unlocking of it was harder in the first game for the United States. And they didn't do it as well. They didn't utilize the width of the field, which they did much better in the second game when they had Sofia Huerta and Carson Pickett in their outside back roles, really pushing high and occupying that space, which pulled Lindsey Horan and Christy Mewis, who were the defensive midfielder 6, back much, much farther, giving them less of an attacking presence and much more of a defensive playmaking presence because the outside backs were pushed so high. So when we look at the heading into these CONCACAF W championships and playing against Haiti, we know essentially what we're going to see. I imagine we'll see Andy Sullivan get the start in that 6 role with rotation between Lindsey Horan and Christy Mewis playing back there. And honestly, I liked Christy Mewis in that defensive midfield role. I think if she knows her role and she knows the understanding is not to score goals, but to find that connecting pass, to switch the point of attack, to control the tempo of the game, to dictate the play and have the forwards be checking back for the ball, which pulls that block out of shape. And if Mewis knows that, Horan knows that, they will be fine in that role. And we saw that against Colombia because those were the areas of the field that I was really looking at. Now, how long is it going to take for them to unlock another team? I think that's something they're working at on right now in film on the training pitch, because you can learn so much from watching film and watching the forwards' movements and where the opponents that are defending them track to, and then how that opens up different space, and having the freedom and the flexibility and the creativity as attacking players to read that movement, find the open spaces, and then occupy those spaces, while also the players with the ball understanding that that's where you're going to go as well. I basically just explained a creative offense. And that's really what we didn't see too much of in either of these games.
I'm eager to see if this team can sort of build off these two matches specifically going into this CONCACAF tournament. You know, throwing out She Believes Cup out the window, you know, a game against New Zealand where they forced three own goals, you know, throwing out the matches against Uzbekistan that were like completely lopsided scores. These two matches specifically, I think I'm looking for them to build upon. I liked seeing the front three at times playing a little bit more centrally, a little bit more narrow, trying, you know, allowing some space to open up for the wide players to attack, which these are things that I wanted to see. So, you know, seeing Christy Mewis, you know, a little bit more in that sixth row, that was something that I wanted to see in this match. And I liked what we saw. So I'm hopeful that the transition from coming out of these two matches into CONCACAF W Championship will be the two games that maybe aid this team a little bit more than some of their prior matches in 2022 and the buildup to this and into this moment. I think even with some of these areas that we're pointing out, right? This is part of sort of the lore of this team, quite frankly. The United States women's national team are the favorites in this match. They are entering this tournament as the reigning champions of this tournament. They won in 2014, they won in 2018. They are the reigning World Cup champions, you know, lifting the cup in 2019. And they are the number one ranked team in the world. So that part of like the criticisms and things like that and the analysis around these particular areas of the attack, I think that's the baggage that comes with sort of being the number one team in the world. There's an expanded format this year. If you're a semifinalist, guess what? You're booking your ticket to the World Cup.
Yeah.
But I think if you're the United States women's national team and you don't come out here and you don't win this tournament, that's a disappointment for this, you know, this program as it has been built, as this sort of machine that goes out there and racks up wins and produces results and wins titles and wins cups and wins medals, et cetera, et cetera. If you don't go out there, it's not, I don't know if it's going to be enough for this team to just say, okay, we qualified and that's enough. I just don't think they're built that way. They've shown us multiple times they're just built different. So we will see how that turns out. And I think we're gonna get a lot more answers, I think, in this first match against Haiti than maybe we might have anticipated in some of these prior seven matches that they played to start out 2022.
I completely agree. And as you mentioned, if you make it to the semifinals, you're in. So this first round and these first two rounds are incredibly important for every single team in this. And it all starts on Monday, USA versus Haiti.
Lisa, give me a player who you want to have a big game against Haiti.
For the United States.
Yep.
I mean, Mallory Pugh, I want her to be able to take her creativity to this Haiti side and unlock their back line, unlock their box, get good shots on goal, get crosses into the box, really connect with Emily Fox, who's in behind her on the left side. I want Mallory Pugh to have fun and like play her best game ever. We've seen her slowly building up. I don't want to see it plateau at this point. I want to see her continue to climb and hit that peak. What about you?
I'm with you for all the same reasons, but for Sophia Smith, I really liked what we've seen out of her, both her club playing with the Portland Thorns and what we've been seeing from her recently with the United States women's national team. And I want to see that progression continue throughout this tournament. And we're going to be here for you all throughout the entire duration of the CONCACAF W Championship. You can watch every single game across Paramount Plus. Lori Lisa and I will be covering the games. We're going to be doing live recaps for all the United States Women's National Team matches. So make sure that you subscribe to us on YouTube so that you never miss out on a show for when we react to the results. Thank you all so much for listening to Attacking Third. You can follow us on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram now at Attacking Third. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere you listen to your podcast shows. We're also available as video. Subscribe at youtube.com/attackingthird. And we'll be back with so much more. Reminder, if you're in California, come to Bacon California Stadium for our live Attacking Third event from 4 to 7 in LA for Sandra Herrera and Lisa Roman. This was Attacking Third.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.